The following is a class on the Srimad Bhagavatam, 4th Canto, Chapter number 14, Texts number 44 and 45, given by His Grace Sriman Sankarshan Das Adhikari, recorded on September 11th, 2009, in Copenhagen, Denmark.
So today we are reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, 4th Canto, Chapter 14, Text number 44.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Kaka Krishna Tirasango Rasva Bahur Mahanu Rasva Panina Nasagro Raktak Takshtam Ramurdaja Kaka Krishna Tirasvango Rasva Bahur Mahanu Rasva Panimna Nasagro Raktakshastam Ramurdhaja.
Translation by Srila Prabhupada. This person born from King Vena's thighs was named Bahuka. And his complexion was as black as a crow's. All of the limbs of his body were very short. His arms and legs were short, and his jaws were large. His nose was flat. His eyes were reddish, and his hair copper-colored. We'll read the next verse. Tang te tu vandatang dinan kim karo mittivadinam nishidet yavruvangstata sa nishadas tatobhavat. He was very submissive and meek, and immediately after his birth, he bowed down and inquired, "Sirs, what shall I do?" The great sages replied, "Please sit down, Nishida." Thus Nishida, the father of the Naishadha race, was born. It is said in the Shastras that the head of the body represents the Brahmins, the arms represent the Kshatriyas, and the abdomen represents the Vaishyas, and the legs, beginning with the thighs, represent the Shudras. The Shudras are sometimes called black or Krishna. The Brahmins are called Shukla or white. And the Kshatriyas and the Vaishyas are a mixture of black and white. However, those who are extraordinarily white are said to have skin produced out of white leprosy. It may be concluded that white or a golden hue is the color of the higher caste and black is the complexion of the Shudras.
Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Jata Varakamala Shri Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupa Sagrajata Sahagana Raghunathan Vita Tam sajiva sadaita zavadutam parijana saitam krishna chaitanya deva Shri Radha. Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakam Vitamsha.
So it's quite a story, the story of King Vena. It's a wonderful story, actually. Good conquers evil. So nice thing. That Vena, oh, what a horrible demon he was. Can you imagine when he's playing in his childhood play, he's killing his own playmate? Just imagine little boys playing and any boy he disagrees with, he just kills him. Can you imagine what kind of a kid he was? Horrible little demon, you know. The father tried everything he could to rectify the boy, but he just couldn't do it, so he just gave up and went to the forest. The father just renounced the world and said, well, I don't care, I'm just renouncing this thing. And left this boy in charge of the kingdom. And then all hell really broke loose. Can you imagine such a person's ruling the kingdom? He told the Brahmins, you Brahmins, you don't know me. I'm God. You worship me. Stop worshiping Vishnu. Can you imagine what a rascal he was? He makes Hitler look like a Sunday school teacher. I mean, he was really, really heavy. Heavy, heavy. Of course, practically Hitler was close, but he was actually having him do the puja to him, worshiping him as God, which is even worse than Hitler. Yeah. So, this was a wonderful pastime here of how the Brahmins, normally the Brahmins are very peaceful, very renounced and detached, you know, shamadamasta saptapashocham, tantirarjamamayivacham, Gyanam Vigyanamastikram Bhamakarna Sabhavajam. Chantir, they're very tolerant. The Brahmins are very, very tolerant, you see. They just want to remain peaceful so they can study the scripture, practice the scripture, you know, chant the holy names. They don't want to be disturbed by politics. But sometimes, when the political situation becomes so bad, the Brahmins interfere, you see. They sometimes dabble in politics. They didn't have to worry about, you know, trying some terrorist tactics or running for political office. The Brahmins in those days were very powerful. They just chanted some mantras and assassinated that rascal. Wiped him out by mantra. Poof, finished. You see. But now the Brahmins have a responsibility. Well, now there's no king at all, you see. It's like we see in Iraq, you see, when Saddam Hussein was there. You know, at least there was some order, you see. He was a tyrant, but at least there was order in the country. You know. It wasn't like crime happening everywhere. Just one big criminal, you see, subdues all the little tiny criminals. So when Vena is finished, now all the little tiny criminals, they come out of their holes where they were hiding, you see. And they all hell really broke loose there in the kingdom after Vena was assassinated. So now the Brahmins, they have to do something to rectify. So here's the pastime. They took the dead body of Vena, they churned it, and the sinful reactions, all the sin of Vena popped out in the form of Nishada. This Nishada, yeah. Or the Nishada, yes. The father of Nishada race, Nishada. He was the manifestation of all these sins. But it's interesting to note here that even he was, the sinful reactions coming out, still he was a humble, submissive Shudra. So it's an interesting note. You see, in the Vedic culture, the low-class men, they were actually high-class also. Because they were submissive to the higher caste, you see. the sudra class, they were very high-class people, actually. Even though they were not so elevated, but they were, because they were completely submissive to the higher classes, they were also considered high-class. It's only those who are outside of the Varnashram system, you see, who are the low-class people. But even the low-class were high-class because they followed the high-class. But now the social situation is so disrupted, even the so-called high-class, they're all low-class. There are no high-class men, you see. Only one high-class man came, His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. So now he is creating higher class, the true higher class, Brahmin class, to guide the Kshatriya, to guide the Vaishya, to guide the Shudra, you see, how to live properly in this human life. We have transmigrated through so many species of life. Heavy, heavy, hellish conditions we have gone through. In the 8,200,000 species. Jalaja Navalakshani Stavada Laksha Vingshati Krimiya Rudra Sankhyaka Pakshinam Dashalakshanam Tringsha Lakshani Pashavaha Chatur Lakshani Manasha. The scientists are still trying to figure out how many species they are. They haven't figured it out yet. They just discovered some new ones now in a crater, a mountain crater in Java. They found a big rat as big as a cat. They're all excited. They discovered a new rat. The sages, they already knew all these species, 8,400,000. They didn't have to bother. And just see, Krishna is decimal, he could say decimally oriented person. He has 10 fingers also. Why does he have 10 fingers? Because he wanted to have 10 fingers. They say that, well, the decimal, we have a decimal system because we have 10 fingers, but actually, that's not true. Not true. Krishna has given, he is decimally oriented. That's why there are 8,400,000 species. Rounded off to the 10, you understand? 8,400,000 species. God himself is decimally oriented. Tens oriented. In terms of mathematics, Krishna is oriented to tens. So that's where our tendency, our tenness comes from. It comes from Krishna, not from our 10 fingers. You see, the scientists have got it all wrong again. So, anyway, we've gone through this extremely difficult situation in these millions and millions of life forms. And now we've gotten a very, very rare opportunity. Atato Brahma Jigyasa is enjoined in the Vedanta Sutra. Now you have a human life, you must utilize it to inquire about the Absolute Truth. And what is the Absolute Truth? That is also stated. Janma Jashi Jataha. The Absolute Truth is that from which everything is coming. These speculators, they say it's coming from Big Bang. Vedanta says, no, it's coming from Absolute Truth. That's where everything is coming from. But actually, we also know where his Big Bang is coming from. Prabhupada said, that is the glance of Mahavishnu. So, they don't know what's going on. They want us to accept them as the authorities. And people do. They're so stupid, they accept these rascal scientists as authorities. You can see routinely in the news, they will talk about, how it all began with the big, how this thing happened, Darwin's theory is accepted as gospel truth. In the media, it's just accepted as true, not even questioned. Just like, here is Denmark, it's accepted as true. Denmark exists. You see, Copenhagen is a city in Denmark. It's accepted as true. They accept Darwin's theory as true in the same way. even though it's completely untrue. So that is the situation in the world society now. They've taken the speculations of imperfect men and they've promoted that to the level of Shastra. That if you question it, you're a heretic. You're a fanatic. But who is the actual fanatic, you see? These scientists are the fanatics. Because they blindly accept. Instead of basing their theories on facts, they bend the facts to suit their theories. That's what they do. If some fact comes in which doesn't match their theory, they filter it out. No. We don't want to hear that fact. It doesn't match our theory, you see. That's not science. That's called cheating, you see. The facts are, they only accept those facts which support their theories. That's not science. They're not trying to understand things as they are. They're trying to promote themselves as big, big authorities. That's what they're trying to do. So we're being misled by such unscrupulous men. Therefore, nobody is happy on this planet right now. The whole place is miserable. I mean, people are just miserable. They've been, by miseducation, they've been brought down to the platform of animals. We were seeing on the airplane yesterday. These people are just like animals. They don't even have human consciousness. It's a pathetic situation. Pathetic. Human life begins when one takes shelter of a bona fide spiritual master. That is the Vedic culture. That is human life. First birth, that is by mother and father. Everyone has, dog has first birth also. The second birth is by guru and Vedas. That is second birth. You see. And one becomes twice born by diksha. Then their human life has actually begun. That is Vedic culture. And the Kali Yuga is so bad now that we have so many hundreds and thousands of gurus who are bogus, presenting Mayavadi philosophy. I'm God, you're God, we're all God, all the gods are one. That is not stated in the Vedic wisdom, that all the gods are one. In the Rig Veda, it's clearly stated, Om Tad Vishnu Paramang Param Sada Pasyanti Siriyo Divya Chaksharatatam. The demigods, they're looking at the abode of Vishnu as the supreme. You see. Parvati Devi asked her husband, my dear Lord, Shiva, my dear Prabhu, she said. She didn't call him by the name, actually. That is Vedic culture. My dear Prabhu, of all the type of worship, what is the topmost worship? He didn't answer her by name. He said, Vishnu Aradhanam Devi. He didn't say Vishnu Aradhanam Parvati. He said Vishnu Aradhanam Devi. Now, in Vedic culture, the husband and wife do not address each other by name. There's a formality there. Within the intimacy of the marriage, there's also the formality of not calling each other by the first name. That was Vedic culture. So he said Vishnu Aradhanam Devi. So, of all the types of worship, Vishnu worship is the best. But then he said, even better, even higher than that is worshipping the Vaishnava. So, from that we learn, demigod worship is not the highest thing. That is a lower level thing for persons who are full of material desires, as Krishna confirms in the chapter 7, text 20. In this way. And he reconfirms in text 23 of the same chapter. Antavattu palam tesham tadvat yalpamedasham devan deviyajo yanti madbhakta yanti mamapi. Unintelligent, let's see. Men of small intelligence worship the demigods, and their fruits are limited and temporary. The worshippers of the demigods go to the planets of the demigods. But my devotees ultimately achieve my supreme planet. You see, that is stated by Krishna. So these gurus, so-called gurus, they teach people to worship demigods. They teach people to try that you're a god, that everyone is god. All these false things, you see. They teach that God is impersonal; he has no form. That's described by Krishna in text 24 of that same chapter. He says, "Avyaktang vyaktim apanam." Manyate mamma buddhaya padang bhava majananto mamamyayamanuttamam. Unintelligent men who do not know me perfectly think that I, the Supreme Personality of Godhead Krishna, was impersonal before and have now assumed this form and personality. Due to their small knowledge, they do not know that I am unchangeable and supreme. It's not that God was some impersonal oneness. And now he's manifested a form? No. That impersonal aspect is manifested from Krishna, the person. Brahmano pratishtaham. I am the source of that impersonal Brahman. So we have to go to a spiritual master who knows things as they are, not one of these fools who thinks he's a big guru but doesn't know what he's talking about. You see, we have to go to a bona fide spiritual master who knows the Vedas as they are, you see, as they're actually given by Veda Vyas, not these impersonal misinterpretations. Like that one author and that one famous Gita in India says, it's not to Krishna that you should surrender, but to the unborn, unmanifest that is within Krishna and within everyone. That's not what Krishna says. How you can change the words of Krishna? That's cheating. Krishna says, surrender to me, and he says, don't surrender to Krishna. And is that a qualified translation of the Bhagavad Gita? To completely reverse the meaning? Is that integrity of scholarship? No. But that's cheating. And people accept such Bhagavad Gita, you see, because they don't have bona fide spiritual masters. So we're so fortunate that Srila Prabhupada came, so we actually know what is the real Vedic wisdom, you see. We actually understood what is the correct Siddhanta, the correct understanding of Vedanta, according to the great Acharyas who guided the Vedic civilization for thousands and millions of years. You see, Mahajano Yena Gatasa Panta. You see. One must follow that pathway chalked out by these great Acharyas, you see. Brahma, parang brahma, parang dhamma, pravittam, paramang bhavam. Purusham shashvatam devyam adidevam vajang vudum. Ahustvang rishaya sarve devarshir naradastata asito devalo vyasa svayam shaiva bravishime. Arjuna told Krishna, he said, you are the Supreme Personality of Godhead. You are the ultimate abode. You are the purest. You're the absolute truth. You're the original transcendental, original person, the unborn, the greatest. He said, all the great sages confirm this truth about you, such as Narada, Asita, Devala, Vyas, and now you yourself are declaring it to me. Arjuna is really enlivened because he understands this is what all the great Acharyas have said. He's named just a sample of them, you know, Narada, Asita, Devala, Vyasa. These are just a small sample of the great Acharyas that guided the Vedic culture. And all these Acharyas, they have declared Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So someone who says, no, Krishna is not the Supreme, he's not a spiritual master. He shouldn't be followed. You shouldn't waste your time even going to hear from him. He's just going to misguide you and confuse you. You see? We have to hear from someone who is speaking the actual words of coming from Krishna, you see. That's the only thing that will inspire and enliven us. Vachchita madgata prana bodhiyanta parashparam katayantashchamam nijam tashyantacha brahmatacha. The thoughts of my pure devotees dwell in me, their lives are surrendered unto me, and they derive great satisfaction and bliss by enlightening one another and conversing about me. You can't get enlightened and blissed out by hearing bogus Mayavadi philosophy, even though it may sound very attractive to the mind, you see. Mind-boggling analogies, you see.
You are a drop, now merge into the ocean.
That's one of their popular ones. But just think about it. If you consider their analogy as a valid analogy of spiritual enlightenment, you are the drop, now you must merge into the ocean, which is God, you see, and become God, you see. What happens to the water that merges into the ocean? Does it stay there? No, it evaporates and comes to the land again. As confirmed in the Srimad Bhagavatam, Aruya Krishchena Parangpadam Tada Patangyado Nadrucha Yushmat Angreha. After undergoing great austerities to achieve that Brahman, you see, this what they call the state of no mind, some of them call it. After undergoing great austerities to achieve that Brahman, patanti yadho, they fall back again to material sense gratification. So why make such an endeavor? All these penances and austerities to merge in Brahman, you're just going to come to the material nature once again. But what stays in the water? The fish. They maintain their individuality, but they remain in the ocean forever with the big fish, Krishna. He's the big fish. So just try to be a fish. Don't try to merge into the ocean. Swim in that ocean of transcendental bliss. We're inviting you all to come deep sea diving. You see. We're not asking you to merge into the ocean. We're asking you to come and swim in the depths of the ocean. That's where our invitation to you. Not become the ocean. No. Come and let's swim together in the ocean. You see, that's our invitation to you. Let's swim in that unlimitedly nectarian ocean of bhakti. Yes, what is that? Bhakti rasamrita sindhu. You see. The nectarian ocean of devotion. Described by Rupa Goswami, you see. We are meant to swim in that ocean. And Prabhupada said surfing, or he said sporting in the waves of Lord Chaitanya's mercy. We can also say surfing, you know. The same thing. This is the real surfing. Of course, you don't have surfers here, but in the U.S. it's very popular in California, the surfers, in Hawaii, you know, Australia, Fiji. They love to get on those waves and ride the surfboards. It's a big sport, you know, surfing. So, but this is the real surfing, you see. There, as Prabhupada called them, sufferers instead of surfers. Those waves don't last very long, you see. But this wave lasts forever. You can ride this wave with Lord Chaitanya's mercy forever. Just get on this wave, catch the ultimate wave. They call it catching a wave, you know. When you get your surfboard, you get it right on the wave at the right place. It's called catching the wave, you know. You just ride the wave, you know. So, catch this wave of Lord Chaitanya's mercy by, how do you catch it? By the mood of bhakti. And then you can ride on this wave forever. Just ride on this bhakti wave forever. The most exciting, thrilling adventure. Riding this wave of bhakti in the ocean of transcendental bliss. And if you get tired of riding on the surface, you can go deep, deep, deep within the ocean. You see, there's unlimited varieties of transcendental pleasures in devotional service. I guarantee it's a much better deal than you get here in Copenhagen. You know, with the prostitutes and the liquor and the cigarettes and the marijuana and the LSD and the heroin and, you know, whatever they try to enjoy here. You know. This is millions and billions and trillions of times more nectarian than any pleasure you can squeeze out of this material nature. Take all the pleasure, all the sense gratification, all the sex, all the money, all the power, all the drugs, all the ego gratification you could ever have in this material world, and multiply it times billions and billions and billions of times. And it won't even equal one insignificant fraction of a fraction of a fraction of a fraction of a drop of devotional service. So just try to taste one drop of this devotional service. If you do so, your life will be successful, I guarantee you. Vishaya vinivartante nirahara shadehina rasavar shangrishopyasva parangdvishvanivartate. The embodied soul may be restricted from sense enjoyment, though the taste for sense objects remains. But ceasing such engagements by experiencing a higher taste, what happens to him? He's fixed in consciousness. So all you have to do is get that higher taste, you see. Somehow get a taste one drop of bhakti. Somehow just get one drop of bhakti. You don't need the whole ocean. Just somehow find a way that you can taste one drop of bhakti. And that's all you need. One drop is all you need. And then you forget all of the so-called happiness, even all the way to Brahma Loka, being the demigod in charge of the whole universe, you see. Even that can't equal one drop of bhakti. So anyway, maybe there's some question.
How to reach that
drop? How to get the drop of bhakti? You have to, comes as a gift actually from someone who has bhakti. You have to find someone who has bhakti and you have to serve them with love. That's the key. That's how we got bhakti from Prabhupada. That's how we became inspired with bhakti, by serving that person who has bhakti, you see. Who is emanating bhakti, just like a volcano, you know. Just imagine a volcano spewing, you know, lava in all directions. Not just here and there, but in all directions, 360 degrees, you know, every single direction, spewing lava in every direction, up, down, every way, spewing lava. So the pure devotee, see, he's spewing lava of bhakti in all directions. So we just have to find such a person who has that bhakti, you see, and serve him with love. Inquire from him submissively. Tadvidi pranipatena pariprasnena sevaya upadekshanti te jnanam ganinas tattvadarshina. Inquire from him submissively, serve him in this way, you see. He will reveal that bhakti to us. He'll give us that drop of bhakti. He'll give us a whole ocean, actually, if we're ready. Whole ocean he'll give us. Yeah.